Welcome back to License to Spiel. I'm Carl Wonders.
And I'm Thad Haight.
And today we are going to take a quick pause from murder and other things with Columbo.
There are murders in this movie.
We both went to see Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, and we're going to sit down and just kind of talk a little bit about our initial thoughts of the movie.
Yes, which the movie that would originally have been Dead Reckoning Part 2.
Mm-hmm. So I think we'll do some, you know, high level thoughts about it that are spoiler free, and then do a spoiler warning and then get into some details like we have the last couple times we've done this. So what was your initial feelings on the movie?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was long.
Yep. Bladder fortitude is tested with these movies, I think.
Yes. But no, I did enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a fun movie. Mm-hmm. The action, as always, is pretty amazing. There are some really ridiculous stunts in this movie, as you would expect. There are moments, for me at least, that strained realism a fair bit. as you would expect in a Mission Impossible movie.
Yes.
I mean, I think some of these stunts were in the trailers that people know about. I mean, there's the stuff with the biplane. Again, I don't know how they film some of this stuff.
Yeah, the one that truly doesn't seem plausible to me was him surviving coming up from the bottom of the ocean without a suit.
I mean, I think they said at one point that the sub was 500 feet down. I'm not sure how far you can swim down, and they make a big deal about how he has the special suit that he can breathe, and you have to have a special air mixture, and he has to do the special training. Like, I would have thought, and maybe I'm just channeling the abyss here, that he would have needed a special suit, and just having his body exposed to that depth would have been a problem. But
right. Yeah, exactly. Also, I feel like he was a lot farther from the surface when he went down than he was when he went up, but went back up, which is interesting because if anything, he would be farther from it because the sub had fallen.
Yes, I agree. And he somehow held his breath most of the way up. And I have questions about that. We get most of the usual suspects from the last movie coming back.
Including, and we get some unusual suspects from the previous movies coming back as well.
When we get to the spoilers, we can spoil one of them that I was surprised but I immediately realized who it was when it happened. And I was like, oh, wait, yes, because we can talk about why.
It took you got it faster than I did. I wasn't I thought maybe you like knew the actor from somewhere or something. Mm-mm. And it wasn't until they started talking about, you know, 30 years ago. Oh, now I know who this is.
Yep. Yes. Yep. There's a considerable effort made in this movie to tie it back to the other films, except for number two.
Really only one in three. They don't mention anything from Ghost Protocol through Fallout.
Okay, we'll talk about this too.
I mean, other than the clips at the beginning.
Yeah, you made a big joke about how the opening felt like a clip. It's a 3-hour clip show because we start with a whole bunch of scenes from previous movies.
Yeah.
And they do a whole bunch of flashbacks throughout the movie that I, for the most part, I didn't think were that necessary, but they do it. Because I think some of these movies, especially the Christopher McQuarrie ones, get a bit of flack for being confusing to people. Maybe if you're not paying attention, you miss something. I know there's convolution in the story and things like that. It felt to me that they went out of their way to avoid that this time, to the point where they were explaining things that didn't need to be explained to me. Mm. And there's a MacGuffin that Gabriel, who's the villain from the last piece that comes back, S.A. Morales plays him. He has a MacGuffin around his neck at one point, and they show it around his neck about 10 times.
Yes.
And I'm like, are they worried that we're going to forget that that's there? Like, what's that about?
Yeah, I don't know. It was strange. They cut to various things like that to remind us what's going on. That whole thing where Hunt is chasing Gabriel to get the what did they call it? The poison pill? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
He chases Gabriel a lot, though.
But no, I meant at the end when he's chasing him. Yeah. He's chasing him and they keep cutting to it all around his neck and all that.
Yeah.
That was very reminiscent of the ending of Fallout, where the same thing happens.
Yeah.
Down to Ethan has to hit this thing and then we'll see that it's done and we can finish the task back at the other place. Yeah,
and everything has to be timed exactly the same. And
yeah,
and I even got a sense, and you know, I apologize, we may end up spoiling things now, so we may just have to
just
issue a blanket
straight
spoiler,
up spoilers,
because I'm just, for the listener's sake, I mean, we saw this movie and then we both drove home. And it's been a few hours since we saw it, and I'm actually worried that I'm going to forget things and all that.
Yeah, unfortunately, Carl and I do not live in the same place, so right. We found a happy medium in between our locations.
I think we found a way that it was better for the two of us that we got to see the movie at the same time together, which we hadn't done, but it's actually worse for this
podcasting.
Yes.
But I mean, I enjoyed seeing it with you, so it was worth it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm going to be selfish and benefit myself versus the podcast in these kind of things.
Well, next time, let's just record it in one of our cars. Problem solved. Oh,
that would be interesting. No, what I was going to say was that whole end sequence reminded me a lot, like, because originally in Fallout, it starts with Ethan in a helicopter hanging onto that bag of stuff.
Yes.
And then he like climbs up and he's in another helicopter chasing after Henry Cavill.
Right.
And that is exactly what this is, where he's in another plane.
Right. There's the planes. There's also the entire contrivance that he's chasing the guy to get the doohickey, has to hit something on the doohickey so that the people that are defusing or solving the problem can actually finish doing it.
And they're defusing a bomb again this time.
Also, there's no way they made it back inside and closed the door in 10 seconds. I call bullshit on that.
I call bullshit on a lot of things. We didn't mention the part about how this chase kicks off, where Tom Cruise is running after Gabriel's plane, realizes he can't catch him, stops, turns around, almost gets run over by the second plane, and somehow manages to grab the axle of the wheels as it takes off.
I mean, that was just like a random goon that was flying that plane, right? We weren't supposed to know who that was.
No, and why was the random goon even taking off? I thought he was going to go find the plane, because for some reason S.A. Morales mentions, I have a second plane, which again is Chekhov's second plane.
Right, and that's why I figured Tom Cruise was going to see the plane on the runway and grab it. In fact, I even turned to you. I'm like, second plane.
Yep. And then the second plane almost hits him.
Yeah, that was not what I was expecting. Like, why? Because it doesn't even make sense that he would have the goon in the second plane. His plane has two seats.
Right. Right. Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, it makes sense that the plane has two seats because those planes have two seats. But
right. So, yeah. So, like, but my point was, why does he have the goon taking the second plane instead of just, yeah.
Well, and also, I mean, I had a suspicion that the whole reason the second plane existed was so
for this,
Ethan would go after him, because Gabriel keeps saying that Ethan's going to follow him because he has the other half of the doohickey.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, then it turns into him chasing Ethan at that point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which was interesting.
Which, again, to go back to Fallout, there's moments in Fallout where they're clearly trying to kill each other. And I'm like, you can't kill each other because you need the other doohickey to stop the thing.
Yeah. What was his plan if he had crashed Ethan's plane? Like, how was
he gonna... doohickey didn't get broken? I mean...
or burnt in the wreckage? Like, this was not a good plan.
No.
It was worse than Ethan's plans, and Ethan's plans were tenuous at best. Ethan's
plans were pretty bad.
But yeah, I did find it very interesting. We referenced the first movie a ton. Mm-hmm. We referenced the third movie it was very important to the plot. But other than the clip show at the beginning, there was no mention of the other four movies prior to the, I mean, obviously we mentioned Dead Reckoning, whether or not you want to call it part one, but Mission Impossible 2, no mention. I don't blame them for that. But Ghost Protocol, Rogue Nation, and Fallout, nothing.
I mean, other than at one point, I don't know if it's during the big clip montage at the beginning or later, we get that long shot of the end of Ghost Protocol when we see his ex-wife going into the liquor store or yeah, in the coffee shop or whatever it is.
But like, they mentioned his wife, but they don't, other than seeing that shot, the conversation doesn't mention anything that happens in Ghost Protocol.
That's true.
The only conversation about his wife was stuff that happened in Mission Impossible 3.
Mm-hmm. We get Solomon Lane's voice come back once or twice. And again, this is because I just saw it and it's already fading. Like when that happens, you mentioned references to Dead Reckoning. I mean, other than the plot setup, I was surprised how little they actually paid off from that movie. Like,
I mean, Palm Clemente is like the only important thing that came from that movie, I think.
Yeah, and she's not used that much. She's kind of comic relief in this one in a weird way. They made a big deal, I felt, in Dead Reckoning about how Gabriel knew Ethan from the past because he shot that woman that Ethan was with, and they don't pay any of that off at all.
I forgot about that. Like, I did not get a chance to rewatch Dead Reckoning before going to see this. So yeah. It's been a minute since I've seen it. Last time I watched it was when we rewatched it for the podcast.
Okay. Yeah.
So I had completely forgotten that. You're right. They don't mention that at all.
Nope. They made what felt to me like a big deal about hiding who Grace was and her backstory. And they every time they would mention her, she only had the name Grace. They didn't mention she had a last name or anything like that. And again, none of that matters in this.
Yeah.
I was hoping that would be paid off in some way, although, you know, there were ways they could have paid that off that I thought would have been kind of lame. But
also Grace and Rebecca Ferguson's character meld in my mind.
Yes.
Which, I mean, there's a reason for that. But
yeah. Well, I mean, we mentioned to each other on the way out of the theater that this could have just been Rebecca Ferguson's character the whole time, and it wouldn't have really changed anything. I
do not recall her name at all.
Other than Ilsa Faust.
That was it. You're right.
Yep. I looked that up earlier. Yeah, it's like, other than the fact that the final piece of the big MacGuffin puzzle where it's like we have to get the thing and plug it into the thing and then clip the thing and then pull and then add the thing. And the last thing is they have like a split second to pull the final thing out of the socket, basically. And
what was it, like 100 milliseconds?
100 milliseconds. Like? Yeah. Which, just say a tenth of a second. It's easier. But and they're like, we need a great pickpocket.
How wild would it have been if they had said in 1 decisecond?
Really? Then we would have to have a scene explaining what a decisecond is.
Yes.
Well, it's your Star Trek thing about 1,000,000 kilometers.
I hate that so much. There are. Yes. Anyway.
I mean, they do use exabytes at one point in this.
They do.
Because apparently there's a vault somewhere in Africa that is storing all the human knowledge in it.
I mean, okay.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. It's probably not true, but it's a good idea.
Which has the term exabytes used because you would need that much storage. And I think the only other time, weirdly, I've seen exabytes used was in Ocean's 13.
And how many? It was measured in terabytes, wasn't it? Of the little glowy thing.
Yeah, 500 terabytes. Several hundreds terabytes.
In 5D storage.
Sure.
Even if you accept that the fourth D is time, what is the fifth D?
Well, Madeline L'Engle said it was the Tesseract, right? To jump through space. So okay, I read A Wrinkle in Time.
If you've got that, then you could surely store more than just 500 terabytes. Like, it could be infinite.
I do like how the entity is finally trapped in the Moriarty from Next Generation ship in a bottle.
Yes.
Solution where they trick it into some kind of fake reality, I guess. At least that seems to be what it is.
I'm still mad that Picard season 3 teased Moriarty and then it wasn't really
that was not what I wanted from a Moriarty callback.
Well, it would have been fine if it had just been a callback and we didn't get it in the trailer. But the fact that we got it in the trailer.
Yeah.
Like if it hadn't been in the trailer, but he showed up in the episode that way, that would have been cool. I would have liked that.
Yeah.
But by showing it in the trailer months before, we were all like, oh, Moriarty's coming back. It's gonna be amazing.
we'd alluded to this, but it was fun seeing Donlo, the guy from the Black Vault from the first movie, come back.
Yes.
In Alaska, as was mentioned by Kittredge in that movie. He says, I want a Manning in Alaska.
I was Alaska half by the end of the day. Expecting at some point him to realize who Ethan was before eventually he does. But like, realize the person he says, he's like, wait a second, you want me to help that guy? But the way they did it works too.
Yeah, it works nice. And they gave him something to do. That was fun. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed seeing Trimal Tillman from Severance, who plays Mr. Milchick, is the submarine captain.
Okay. I have not seen Severance, but.
Oh, I figured you'd seen Severance. Okay. No, he's a big part of that show. And
I will watch Severance at some point. At this point, it's kind of like a contrary thing. Like,
oh, okay.
A million people have told me to watch Severance.
So you're like, no.
Yeah.
This is sort of the Jeffrey Wright of this movie. Like, why do you put Hannah Waddingham in your movie for one scene and have her speak in an American accent?
Yeah, that was it was almost like a cameo.
Yeah, I mean, so would she but like more?
She was apparently important enough that she got her name in the intro.
Yep. Well, so did Janet McTeer, who was in like one scene.
Yeah.
Holt McCallany, he had multiple scenes, I guess. He was in the credits. Nick Offerman shows up as a general and looks not great without a beard, as she liked to point out.
I liked the subversion of expectations where you kind of think that Nick Offerman is going to shoot the president, but in reality, he was getting the gun to make sure that someone else didn't try to shoot the president.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that whole thing, because they make a deal about the beginning of the movie that there are these weird cult people around the AI that are like being drawn into its whatever it's doing. It seems like a lazy way of just saying, well, anybody could be bad, because, and they pull that off a couple times with that scene. And then one of the people on the submarine is a plant, I guess.
All right. I want to address the countdown.
Which countdown?
Big countdown.
Okay, the big 4-day countdown. Okay.
How could you possibly know how long it would take? How could you possibly know what order it's going to attack different countries?
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't it? What's stopping it from attacking every country at once?
Yeah. Like, oh, why did it have to go from like the UK to China to Russia and knock them off in sequential order instead of all at once? Yeah,
right.
That's a good question.
And before it had taken the UK, China and Russia, how did they know they had 3 days?
That's a good question, because we need a countdown in the movie.
Like, how did they come up with that figure?
You haven't seen this movie, but it gave me serious War Game vibes. Where there's a countdown to nuclear destruction in that movie too, and it's about a computer trying to hack its way into something.
The only winning move is not to play. I know that's
correct.
And would you like to play a game?
Yep. So I did find a lot of that, and they also do make a big deal about DEFCON, and there was a big DEFCON sign on the wall, which I thought was another allusion to War Games. My favorite,
they use DEFCON correctly. There's a lot of movies and TV shows where they're like, oh, we're at DEFCON 5 now. And like, no, that's the good one.
You know, the joke from the Big Bang Theory around DEFCON.
I don't remember it now.
Cause I've heard it both ways, where it's either up or down. And I think it is correct that it counts down. It counts down.
The actual Pentagon uses it, counting down.
So somebody says there's a thing, and the four guys in the show are like, something is bad is about to happen or something. They're like, DEFCON 5. And then Sheldon, the one guy, sits down and he's like, well, if it's 5, that's no big deal. and they say, and the one of the other ones argues like, well, no, five has to be worse. You know, he's like, what do you mean five's worse? Yeah, Star Trek five worse than one. And they get in this big argument about
whether
Star Trek five is worse than Star Trek one, which
it is.
Yeah. But my favorite line is they say that Star Trek five is the standard from which all badness is measured, which is kind of unfair to Star Trek five. But
I mean, Star Trek five isn't great, but yes.
No, it's not great. Speaking of not great, the fact that we find out that Shea Whigham is Jim Phelps's son for no reason at all. What? Why? Doesn't matter. He could still be Briggs or whatever the hell his name is.
Also, and
it wouldn't change anything.
I don't actually know how old Shea Whigham is. He's probably younger than Tom Cruise, but mm-hmm. Look at Shea Whigham standing next to Tom Cruise, and you're like, so this guy was 7 years old when Ethan Hunt was like, what? No.
Yeah.
Because he specifically says, and your father, oh, wait, no, never mind. I just realized he said that your father disappeared when you were seven, but that would have been long before the events of Mission Impossible 1. Never mind. Strike all of that.
Shea Whigham was born in 1969.
So, yes, he's younger than Tom Cruise.
Yes.
But Shea Whigham has aged like a normal human being, so he doesn't look younger than Tom Cruise.
Yes. He's only 7 years younger.
I will say, I was noticing in this movie that Tom Cruise is finally starting to crack. Like,
he is.
You could see that you could see the age lines in his face.
Mm-hmm. I disagree with Haley Atwell. I don't love the long hair.
No, but he's had it before. It's not.
Yeah. It sort of alternates.
Yeah. I'm ambivalent about his hair.
We should talk about the line that gets thrown out there a couple times where they say that if they destroy the entity, they destroy cyberspace.
What?
Yes, exactly.
they use cyberspace a lot. Like
they do.
Like they're afraid of using the word internet, I guess.
Yeah, and that cyberspace just feels like a term from like the 90s or something. Do people call it that much anymore?
It's like the information superhighway.
it's a series of tubes, the internet.
I never actually watched it, but I did see the episode of the original CSI that was its backdoor pilot, and it was so terrible.
It is fun watching. I wonder if in 20 years or whatever, we'll feel the same way about watching the first movie and their ideas about how the internet worked and the UI that they used and everything to like send emails and stuff, where like the envelope would like fly in and put a stamp on it and then it'd go flying away off the screen. And
the fact that they didn't use an actual email address.
Max 3.314.
Yes.
Yeah. Or Job 314. Yeah.
It was Max at Job 314.
That's right. Yes. So something else that jumped out to me, I thought kind of goes back to when we were talking about how they kind of over explain things in a way. I wish they had done it a little bit differently. They had this whole, the whole setup with Ethan has to go down to the submarine and then come back up, and they have to have that portable hyperbaric chamber to put him in because, you know, obviously he has to come up from a great depth and do it pretty quickly, and he's going to get the bends and all this stuff. And then they have this whole spiel on the submarine. Like, I wish they'd withheld that bit until, because the captain on the submarine said they end up getting pulled away and they have to leave. And he's like, well, but you need our chamber. And he's like, actually, your chamber was never part of the plan. And like, we already know that. Like, we know that that's okay, because we've seen the little tent thing and all that stuff. And I keep coming back to what I feel like they edited this in a way to keep people from complaining that it was too hard to follow.
Yeah.
And I think they overdid it a little bit, you know.
If they had gotten rid of some of those parts, they could have made the movie a little shorter.
A little shorter, yeah.
Yeah, this movie's what, like 2 hours 45 or something like that?
Why do they keep moving the run times and stuff? 2 hours and 49 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, that's long.
That's long, yeah.
The Google summary rounds up to 2 hours and 50 minutes.
six minutes longer than Dead Reckoning Part One.
I mean, my Blu-ray case says Part One, so that's its title in my opinion.
Well, the credits says Part One, and they're never going to change those.
Well, no, that's a whole thing. Unions and all that.
Yep.
I guess at some point, watching both of them in one go is a thing that I should do.
It's like a day.
It's still shorter than doing Lord of the Rings Extended Edition.
Well, yes, that is true. I guess there are some things that this movie is not longer than.
If they ever release the Woo cut, it'll be longer.
I kind of want to see the Woo cut now.
I do want to see the Woo cut.
I don't know if I want to see a 4-hour version of Mission Impossible 2, but it can't be worse. Just longer. more bad. I don't know.
Hey, I will always say Mission Impossible 2. The world owes Mission Impossible 2 a favor because it means that Doug Ray Scott wasn't Wolverine.
That's, yes. Yeah.
So this movie.
Yeah.
Because we're bouncing around everywhere anyway.
Right.
And we're not going to be able to talk coherently about a movie that we watched a couple hours ago and cannot bring up to scrub through because it's still in theaters.
And couldn't even take notes, you know.
Right. There's the moment when they manage to get off the coordinates and send them out via Morse code. And the captain of the sub puts it in and it's down near Antarctica. It's like, oh, it's on the opposite side of the world. And Ethan has a sudden light bulb. He's like, oh, well, he clearly immediately, oh, well, it's code, so we want to do the opposite. So he just taps the display on the sub, like double taps on those coordinates, and poof, all of a sudden it's showing the opposite location on Earth. Why is that a function that this program has?
That has a shortcut to do
it. Right. Because other than this specific situation, you would never want to, you would never need or want to do that.
No. No. And I love, and like even the UI design where it like draws a line through the globe.
Yes.
It's like, wouldn't it, it would just flip over and be like, okay, now you're here. Like,
yeah.
It wouldn't need to, anyway.
Someone was paid to make that.
Yeah. So on the flip side, I want to talk about my favorite piece of production design, I think, in the entire movie. And it's something that makes sense because we know that everybody is trying to be as off the grid as possible. And they're keeping track of, even though they have these giant flat screens that have the world map on them in this weird bunker in Virginia.
That is a real bunker in Virginia, by the way.
Is it? Okay. But I love that the clacking train schedule board that they use.
Yes.
To keep track of all this information up there so they don't have a big screen, even though they have a big screen.
There's a lot of digital things in that not digital room, by the way.
Yeah, there are. Yeah. I still don't understand how the entity works and what it does.
Also, I was totally expecting the entity to try to get to the sub when it went up to periscope depth and raised its antenna.
Mm-hmm. It could have a couple times.
Because they were doing it every hour for how long? Yeah.
A couple days, I think. Up until that submarine came like right up against the back of it.
There is no freaking way that the sub, it doesn't matter that they know they're being followed by the other sub and the other sub knows they're following. It would not be like 20 feet from the back of the other sub because that's just dangerous.
Yeah. There's a reason tailgating on the highway is dangerous.
Like, right. You know. Also, when Ethan whacks into the other sub.
Oh, he's like, dead.
He's dead. Two, the sonar in that sub would have been going crazy.
If they could hear the Russian submarine singing from a distance in Hunt for Red October.
Yes. But I mean, if we count all the times that Ethan Hunt should have died, I mean, in all of these movies.
Yes. I mean, several times in this one alone.
Yeah. Like, yeah, multiple times underwater, multiple times in the plane scene.
Yeah. He has very strong hands.
Mm, And legs.
And legs. Yeah.
He was holding on just by his legs several times on the plane.
Yes.
I did enjoy that the parachute was on fire. That was good.
Oh, when he jumps out of the plane. Yeah.
Yeah, because you see a little bit of smoke and I keep wondering, like, well, that's interesting. And the reason they did that was because they could have the parachute. Mm-hmm. And so that they could have the audience not actually think that Ethan Hunt had just died.
Well, yes.
No, although, one in the audience actually thought Ethan Hunt had died.
No. So they have the fight on the plane, and then Gabriel's falling out of the plane, and he's like, he's like, well, I'm the only one with a parachute. And then he like face plants on the trail of the plane.
Yes. Which I it's possible he even died just then, because like he left a lot of blood behind.
I think he did die just then. Actually,
if he didn't die just then, he certainly died when he hit the ground.
Yes. But this was one of those things where I'm like, oh, come on. Where he makes a point, he's like, I'm the only one with a parachute. And it's like, except for the parachute I have in the front seat of the plane that you're going to find in like 30 seconds.
Right.
Dude, why do you have a plane? Why, if your goon is going to be in the other plane, why do you have a spare parachute in the front of your plane?
A sparachute.
I love it. Sparachute. That's great. I thought it was amusing, but I think, like, Gabriel basically is a non-entity in this movie.
Yeah.
He like steals a thing and runs away like four times in this movie. And that's about all he does. Mm-hmm. Considering how he was built up in the last film and how he knows everything. Apparently he knows everything because he sits in like one of those chambers that Gustav Graves uses in Die Another Day to like get the entity beamed into his brain or something.
Well, or he used to anyway. I think the idea, they call out the entity has cast him aside since he failed it.
Which doesn't really make sense because a computer would just use whatever assets it has.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like, I'm mad at you because you failed me.
Yeah.
It's a very Emperor Darth Vader thing to do rather than...
Failed me for the last time, Gabriel.
Yes, exactly. I apologize to the listeners that this is not going to be in any way a coherent conversation. We're just going
to... I feel like our listeners are used to that.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, another thing I was curious about, and I looked up and it was confirmed that at one point, the president, who was Angela Bassett, who we saw in Fallout.
Okay, so that is, I suppose, a slight reference to Fallout, but I don't think it counts because they still don't mention any of the events of Fallout.
She sends a date on a piece of paper to Hannah Waddingham, who's an admiral on a aircraft carrier, and it's May 22nd, 1996, and it's a date that apparently has significance to both of them. It turns out it's actually the release date of the first Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah, I caught on to that.
yeah.
But in universe, it was apparently that someone close to both of them died because the government wouldn't take a risk to save them.
Yes. Which, okay. It's an excuse to put the release date of the first movie in your movie.
Yeah. No, I figured that immediately when I saw that. I'm like, wait a second. Because I knew this was the... I knew that they kept talking about how it was 30, you know, everyone was 30 years ago. So I'm like, oh, okay.
Does the U.S. president in 2025 or whatever year this is taking place in carry around sealing wax and a signet to seal envelopes with them at all times?
They do if they want to.
I guess so.
I doubt the current U.S. president does. But,
well, no, that's true.
But I mean, there's no. I have gotten letters from people who use sealing wax as an affectation. So no, that is an absolute thing.
It just kind of stood out to me in the moment. I was like, oh, that's interesting. But yeah, I thought the movie was fine. It's probably in the middle of the pack for me. I thought it was.
Yeah.
As to be expected, the stunts were great. I thought the overall story was kind of lacking. Oh, we should mention, I can't believe we didn't mention this. They killed Luther in this movie.
Yes.
Which is sad. He seemed to have some kind of illness that they didn't really explain or even preface in any way.
Did he have it in the in the first
not
one.
That I can remember.
Well,
not that
the,
I can.
They kept showing that flashback where he was when he was explaining the poison pill to Ethan, which was in the first movie, wasn't it?
Mm-mm.
Not the first movie, but the.
No, that wasn't in it at all. Like that was another thing that was weird. The way they were telling the story, where they were doing flash forward and flashback.
I just thought this was something I didn't remember from.
No, because. In the movie, there when they're about to go in the train, Luther's like, I have to go away for a while and do stuff, and we never see him again.
Okay, and apparently it was get medical treatment.
Apparently. But yeah, that was the kind of scene where it's had the characters been different, it would have been a real problem, I think, where it's, I'm going to sacrifice myself because you are Ethan Hunt and you are super important, and but more important than I am, kind of thing.
Yeah. Which I like how it flips it around later when Ethan says, I'm the one that has to go after this because I'm the one that's expendable.
Yes. I just have to plug the thing into the thing. I need to watch it again to kind of really get. I knew they had to plug the thing in the thing and then clip the wire and then pull the thing out, but I didn't quite capture how all of that played together. Like, how does plugging the poison pill into the source code get the computer into the...
My thought, apparently, like, with the poison pill, it would put the entity into the compromised state where it could be captured in the...
Oh, maybe.
Moriarty okay. thing was my sure. interpretation on that.
Sure. That works. Maybe that's what's in the briefcase in Pulp Fiction. it's the same thing. Like at the end, they give him the little box that has the glowing orange, like the glowing light coming out of it, just like in Pulp Fiction and some other things. But yeah, I don't think they paid off everything that they set up in the previous in part one, even though it's not the same title. But it's not bad. And I'll certainly watch it again when it comes out on DVD or Blu-ray or whatever. And not DVD. I don't want
to. No, it was. It's what you would. I mean, it will come out on DVD.
Yeah, but I'm not gonna buy it. But
I mean, I'll get it on 4K Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. But I think this is. It's run of the mill quality that we expect from the McQuarrie Mission Impossibles. Yep. In that they all have a certain level of quality that, you know, they're worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that they do all these stunts for real. Speaking of production designers,
Tom Cruise is going to kill himself someday.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking up the clicky clack board, like the fact that they built kind of Inception style. They built that entire set on the set of the in the submarine on a gimbal thing.
Yeah.
You could spin around and you could see the water move up the side, and the way they locked off the camera. So the water just kind of, because the submarine is.
That scene thing. When you see the water on the side of the shot, that was great. I loved that.
Yeah, I love that. I don't know. Does this feel like the end to you, though?
No. They said it was the end. I mm-hmm. will believe that when we don't get another one. But I right. am
yes.
expecting there to be a sequel. Tom Cruise still likes money.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that surprised, I guess in a weird way, it surprised me is that they didn't. Clearly, they don't have a character that you can clearly hand the torch to either. Where it's not like the end of Star Trek Picard, we have his son in the scene with Q, where clearly they're going to make a series with his son and on the ship and all that stuff. Because why wouldn't you do that? They're not going to do that. But
they're not.
Like,
but well, that was because the producer wanted. Well,
because
to
the
do
producer
that.
Mouthed off and said something. In
the producer wanted to do that, but the. The network right. had never said they wanted to.
Correct. But yeah, there wasn't like, oh, there's a like that guy who's what's his name? Briggs' old partner, Degas, I guess is Degas or whatever his name is. The guy who was in the tunnel with Don Lowe and his wife.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Like he's the only candidate that even jumps out for me as somebody who could. Possibly be the new Ethan Hunt going forward, whatever, if they make another one.
Yeah, maybe, but I don't think so.
No, but they certainly didn't end in a way that's like, this is the end. And
I mean, I did definitely notice like the scene towards the beginning when Luther and Benji and Ethan are all crowded to get around together in the tunnel talking about their plan. I'm looking at this. I'm like, boy, you can tell these movies have been going for a long time.
Yes.
Because they all look.
They're all little craggy looking.
Yeah.
I mean, Simon Pegg's only 1 year younger than Shea Whigham.
Yeah. If we ever get the fourth Kelvin Star Trek film, it'll have to be like set during the TOS movie era.
Yes. Oh, God. That's never going to happen now at this point. Nah. Considering they didn't really seem to know what to do with that timeline anyway.
Yeah.
Beyond was good, but...
Mm-hmm. It's my favorite of the three.
Yeah. Still a bit of a waste of Idris Elba, but whatever.
Yes. I do know, like, the original plan for the fourth movie would have brought back Chris Hemsworth as Kirk's dad, and now that would have been an expensive...
Yes. Chris Hemsworth is slightly bigger than Chris Hemsworth was in 2009.
Oh, just a tiny bit, yes.
Well, anything else to talk about? Final Reckoning before we...
I mean, I'm sure I'll think of other things afterwards, but yeah. And we'll do a real episode once it comes out on home video and we can like actually watch and take notes and do a normal episode. We'll do one for that. But yeah, I think this is probably it for that.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. Go see it. If you're a fan of these movies, you'll be a fan of this one, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. You know what you're getting. Mm-hmm. Don't get the extra large soda when you go to the theater. That's my only advice.
Yeah, it is quite long.
And every time
we both made it.
We did. There isn't really a good place there. Like, I don't know what the app, there's that like app when can you go to the bathroom in the app?
Oh yeah.
I don't know where you could.
The only time I've ever used one of those was for Avengers Endgame.
Ah.
I remember because I and that was just because I happened to see a link to non-spoiler locations when you know you can go to the bathroom in Avengers Endgame. And there were a couple. Yep. It described some things vaguely. And I don't think I actually even got up to go to the bathroom. I'm like, oh, there's that point.
Yeah.
There was one movie. Oh, no, it was Last Jedi. I really had to go and I missed it. So then I went and saw the movie a second time.
What scene did you miss?
It turns out it was the escape from the casino planet. So I probably
didn't
have to see it a second time. But I mean, I enjoyed it.
It's not a bad scene. It's just not terribly necessary.
Right. No, I saw all of the new trilogy at least twice.
Yeah.
Rise of Skywalker. It was because I went to see it with a different friend to see it the second time. And also, I'm like, I don't know, maybe I was too harsh on it the first time. I was not.
You were not? No. Thinking about that time we tried to watch it ourselves and couldn't.
Stopped after like 30 minutes. Yeah.
Yep. We're like, we're going to drink and watch this movie. And we even the drinking didn't help.
Yeah, I think we got as far as Chewbacca dying and then we're like, nah.
Nah. No, this is not great. It's not even good. Yeah, like I said, it's perfectly good movie. And if you're listening to us, you probably will enjoy it because you've been listening to us talk about all the other ones. So... looking forward to watching it again and talking about it again and whenever they decide to release it on disc, probably not for a while.
Yeah, I'd say probably 6 months at least.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening to us this episode. If you'd like to contact us, you can find us on Blue Sky at Podspiel, PODSPIEL. You can also find this episode and all back episodes of our show on our website, licensedtospiel.com. That's license with a C. You can also find me on Blue Sky at Listening to Film.
And you can find me at Tyrannicus. That's TYRANICUS.
So we'll be back next time again with another episode of Columbo. And
yes.
Keep going with those.